This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast.
Hey, friends, welcome to the podcast. I am so glad you are joining us this week. I want to start by thanking you. I've received so many amazing comments, DMs, emails, texts, all kinds of encouraging words about my new book, How'd I Miss That? And as you guys are working through the book, I'm hearing from you, seeing incredible reviews, and I just want to thank you for that. I think it's most touching when you guys tell me that you have given a copy to a friend or a teacher or a small group leader. Many of you have said you've given it to the women's minister at your church or different people on staff, maybe at your Christian schools, to see if I can come and talk to your groups. And so I just want to say thank you. That's so encouraging. I also want to let you know, because some of you have asked about book club questions. Yes, I have them. And if you're thinking about doing a book club this summer, which some of you are because you have reached out, that's amazing. A great way to have touch points with people in the summer when schedules can get a little erratic. And so I would love to give you those book club questions. And literally all you need to do is DM me, or you can send me an email through my website, CynthiaGanoff.com, and I will get you the book club questions. So would love for you to do that this summer. And if I can, I will even zoom in on some of the book clubs and just touch base, say hi, maybe answer a few questions. So just know that's available. All right. So we've had a couple of great weeks with Carrie Kampakis, and now we are headed in to a week with Tiffany Stein. And Tiffany's a new friend. Her husband is on staff at The Well, which is a church in Austin that my daughter attends. And she's written a new book called Mourning God, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, like grief, loss. And she will tell her story of loss, but really just how she walked through it with the Lord and some disappointments she faced, some hard places in her faith. And what I love is she's making it clear that, yes, sometimes the loss is death, but sometimes it's divorce. Maybe it's loss of a job. Maybe it's a prodigal child. Lots of ways that we experience loss and we have to learn to grieve, and places where we wonder where God is in the midst of it. And so it's a really good word. It's an important word. So I'm excited for you to hear from her. The book is available wherever you get books. Again, it's called Mourning God, and it's Tiffany Stein. All right, here we go. Tiffany Stein, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I am doing excellent. It is so good to meet someone who has fellow friends.
We have so many connections. We were just talking before we started recording, and not the least of which is your husband is the executive pastor, is that right?
Uh-huh, yes.
The Well Church in Austin, which is where my daughter has attended during her years at the University of Texas. And so that church has a very sweet spot for me. It's been real, real precious.
I love it. Thank you. It is an honor to be with you today.
Wow. And so you have a big background. I know you're teaching right now at a private school, but you have a big background in just working with churches and women. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, my husband and I both graduated from Dallas Theological Seminary, and we were both pastors at Irving Bible Church. I served there for over a decade. In the women's ministry, most recently as the women's pastor, and then as the, marriage director and hope and healing director. So getting to walk with people through the joys and sorrows of life. And as you mentioned, right now I get to disciple fourth graders. I am a fourth grade teacher at a private Christian school here in Austin.
Wow. Wow. And so we're going to talk today about your book, which I got to read through yesterday, Grieving Loss, Wrestling with God, and Finding Your Way Back to Life. And the title is Mourning God. And so I'm curious, when you were, what was the title you said you had at Irving Bible, was Hope and Healing? What was the title you said?
Yes, I was the marriage and care director. So I oversaw pre-marriage, but also all of our hope and healing ministries.
Okay. Was the hope and healing, that job, was that before or after you suffered the loss that y'all went through?
It was after.
Okay. I was just curious. I was like, I wonder if you were doing that before and this came along, this job opportunity came before or after. So, you have a story, because anyone who writes a book has a story, but especially when you write a book on mourning. And so would you mind just sharing with everybody kind of what you walked through, and then we'll just go from there in the book. And just I just want everyone listening to know that we've already prayed over you. And if you're listening to this and you are suffering a loss, which most of us are in some form or fashion, and it doesn't have to be just a death. We're going to talk about that, but we've already prayed for you and we want you to be encouraged. And so Tiffany, kick us off by telling us kind of your story.
Yeah. So it was back in 2018. As I said, my husband and I were both pastors at a large church in Dallas, and we were expecting our first child. Pregnancy was normal. And then about 3 weeks before he was due, we found out he had a heart abnormality and would likely need surgery when he was born. But, you know, as far as surgeries can go, it was supposed to be routine. But once he was born, it pretty quickly spiraled, and we realized that he would eventually need a heart transplant. So our son, David, spent all 53 days of his life in the NICU, and it was bittersweet, to say the least. We felt, however, very sustained by God and by our church community. I have never felt so held, so loved. The waiting room was always full. We received hundreds of cards and texts and emails, and God just very divinely intervened, even to the point of having his last week of life. There were two people that attended our church that were in the exact same unit we were placed in, and we had no idea. Our son eventually passed, and I grieved deeply, but I still had the assurance of God's love. And then it was, I think, about a month after David had passed, I remember waking up one day, and it's as if the Lord just got up and walked out of the room and took his presence with him. And that is when I became truly undone. It's one thing to lose your son and to be a mother without a child. It is completely another to trying to be coping and walking through grief and not feel the Lord sustaining you. And that sent me into mourning the God I thought I knew. Many of us are familiar with that first type of grief, the grief of the loss of anything you weren't prepared to deal with, be it a relationship, a loved one, loss of a dream, loss of health, loss of a job, loss of an identity. But it was that secondary grief that undid me, because I thought, you know, Lord, if you are not good, and if you are not going to walk with me through this, if you're not the God I thought I knew, then none of this is worth it, and it's not worth pushing through the grief. And it was out of that devastation that this book was born.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so sorry for your loss, and I know it is still raw. I mean, I guess it will probably always feel raw. And there's so much about what you just said that I want us to hit. But let's just talk about, and you said this, but when you wrote this book, it wasn't just for someone who's lost a child. It's for someone who's felt any kind of loss. You kind of mentioned that. But as you were writing it, who's in mind? People who have lost a marriage?
Yes.
Who's in mind?
Yes. I would say anyone who has walked through a traumatic loss and is now questioning what they thought about, they thought they knew about God. I would say divorce. Perhaps you're single and you had a significant dating relationship. You thought it might materialize in a marriage and that fell through. Failed adoptions, estranged children or family members. The loss of hope of overcoming an addiction or of a chronic illness. I think about a health diagnosis. It can be the loss of a dream due to a limitation, due to abilities. It can be the loss of a job, the loss of a home. There are so many things that we are not prepared to lose. And I think it is in that undoing and that unsettling, then our, not our conscious, but our unconscious beliefs about the Lord and who he is and what we expect him to do begin to surface. Mm. And that is really what this book is aimed at, is God good in that undoing? And if so, how does he draw near and meet us in that?
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad that we are going through these and mentioning them, because sometimes we don't even believe these things count as loss. Mm-hmm. Because you hear a story mm-hmm. of someone who lost a child and you're like, well, I mean, that's loss. I mean, a lost job. I mean, that's nothing in comparison. And I like that you're saying, like, listen, we can acknowledge all these different kinds of loss. As you were talking about that, I was thinking about just a loss in my life that it was during a church hurt. It was a job thing, and it was resulted in a lot of church hurt and just questioning, like, really God's people and God's sustaining during that time for me. And just that, like, Lord, you opened this door. It was not a door I wanted or asked for. And you clearly put me into this place. And then it just unraveled and left me feeling so hurt and questioning your goodness, God. Mm-hmm. And why would you leave me in a place that would end this? And to be able to say that was a loss too. Like, that was
absolutely
really hard in the midst of it. And so I love that you're just saying there's lots of ways that this will minister to you. There's lots of ways that we have to reframe and we have to look for the Lord in it. You also said when you were talking about this, how you felt like the Lord kind of exited the premises during your grief. Mm-hmm. What did that practically feel like?
So in spiritual formation language, there's like consolation and desolation. And obviously we know that God is omnipresent. He is always with us at all times, but his manifest presence, his felt presence, is not always available. And so in spiritual formation language, there's this idea of consolation, of like feeling the Lord's nearness and goodness. And it is that joy just that kind of bubbles up. And then there's the idea of desolation. For whatever reason, where the Lord feels distant, and it doesn't matter how much you are crying out or longing to see his hand, to hear his voice, to feel his nearness and his peace and comfort, for whatever reason, you are not able to receive it. And so that period of desolation for me, I learned just throughout church history, has been called the dark night of the soul. And it's just the absence, the seeming absence of God's presence. It can look like praying and not feeling like you hear a response. Perhaps quiet times were normally rejuvenating and refreshing, and you're reading the word and there is nothing. It looks like all of the ways in which you normally heard from God, he is not responding. And I think in our human tendency, we think, well, I did something wrong. I must somehow like get God to speak to me. And I did all the things. And then when I still couldn't make God speak to me, it was then the crisis of, well, if there's not something wrong with me, then maybe there's something wrong with you. Maybe mm-hmm. you're not good. And yeah. then the unraveling.
Right, right. I love hearing you. I actually had never heard those two concepts, that those explanations. And I love that you're addressing it, because I will just say, I'm not sure I've ever heard someone describe this from like the church. I don't feel like I've ever heard a sermon on this mm-hmm. or a place where the church has been like, and maybe it's because I haven't been in a grief support class. I don't know. But I don't feel like I've heard over and over and over that the Lord will sustain you, which he will. Mm-hmm. I've heard over and over, you will have a peace that surpasses all understanding, all these things, right? But I think based on reading your book, that there's some gaps in how yes. the church has dealt with grief historically. And so I would mm-hmm. love for you just to point out maybe some of those gaps that you've seen, because I think it'll help people feel a little more seen and heard.
Yes. We in the Evangelical West Church are really great at singing the anthem songs on Sunday morning, at preaching God's goodness and sovereignty, at saying, you know, yes, he allowed this, but look at the good that can come from it. Look at the invitation, and all those things are true. But when we only highlight the consolation aspects, the quote unquote positive aspects of the Christian life, what we do is we truncate it and we make it very small, so that if you're experiencing any fear, any doubt, any anxiety, any depression, any sorrow or loss, and you can't say like Job, you know, though he slay me, yet I will worship him, we think there is something deeply wrong with our faith. But as I have been on this journey now 8 years and read through Job and Lamentations and the Psalms and read commentaries and studied it deeply, I find great comfort in knowing that 1/3 of the book of Psalms are lament psalms. Mm-hmm. Job is a book of lament. Lamentations is a book of corporate lament. And there are multiple biblical characters who experience, quote unquote, dark nights of the soul. David was on the run for years from murderous Saul and from his son, and had a wilderness period. Elijah did. And all of these periods are normalized in the Christian faith. And what we see is that in the wilderness, we are stripped of those comforts, those things we normally turn to. And it becomes very clear that our very life breath, our very sustenance is dependent upon the Lord. And so the invitation in those seasons is a greater dependency upon Him. But to think somehow that we have in grief thrust this upon ourselves, or that is a failure on our part, really doesn't honor the breadth of the Christian experience. You know, Jesus was a man of sorrows. He wept. I think about Him weeping before the grave or the tomb of Lazarus. And if we were to say that, you know, we cannot weep, we cannot mourn, we cannot acknowledge the evil that is in the world and call it evil as such, then we're really truncating the full humanity of Christ. And so I think what I would really love for the church to do as a whole is to get better at teaching and preaching lament, at acknowledging that it is actually an act of faith to lament. And what I mean by lament is there's kind of a four-part framework, if you will, that we see in the Psalms. The first is the turn. If you are deeply angry at God, you can either process that anger with God or apart from Him. And the psalmists just invite us to turn towards God. I kind of think of it as relationship counseling. Any relationship worth keeping is worth fighting for. And so it's like inviting God into the metaphorical counseling room. And you're like, oh, I'm going to say my piece. And then I expect you to start talking.
Yeah.
And then the part that many of us are good at is the complain or the cry out. It is saying like, Lord, I thought you would prevent my spouse from having the affair. Lord, I thought you would save my child from this addiction. Lord, I thought, you know, that job was your provision and it fell through. Where is the next paycheck going to come from? It is the crying out and laying your heart out before the Lord and saying, this is not right and it is not good. And then, so turn, complain, and then ask. So in light of this, what do you need? You know, I need provision. I need you to put daily food on our table. I need you to help me to forgive this person so I don't carry this burden. I need the comfort that passes all understanding. And then I'm not going to say ideally, but in many of the Psalms, there is a trust piece at the end. And it doesn't mean it's resolved or that the pain or the suffering has gone away, but it's almost a preaching to your soul. Like David often says, you know, like, oh, my soul, put your trust in Him, or He is alone your hope. It's a reframing. But for those of us who, for whatever reason, in that moment cannot find a piece of trust. So there is Psalm 88. It doesn't resolve with trust. And I think just the fact that the Lord divinely inspired that and included it in there tells me that God welcomes any and all of our prayers. He already knows our deepest thoughts and feelings. And we can say, I have nothing good to say right now. But the lament is an act of faith and trust because you are saying that what we had is at least worth processing through. And so I would just love our churches to normalize that there are seasons of lament. It is not always that high camp experience, if you will, of like going to church camp and yay, everything is good. There are deep sorrows and God is good somehow in the deep mystery of it all.
That's so good. And that, you know, you, and rightfully so, but you hear a lot of people being praised for how they handle the worst of situations and how they handle the grief and, oh, you should have seen that the funeral and the deep faith and all that. But if we could actually acknowledge that there's deep faith involved in the lament side of it and not handling it well and questioning everything, that still too should be praised if you're still pursuing the Lord, right? And that's not something we ever talk about. We talk about the strength of it and maybe not acknowledging that there's strength and there's wisdom in actually those questioning moments. And you said something early on that I want to get back to is you said that you felt like the presence, even though we know the Lord is omnipresence, but His, you know, being with you in the moment, like that just kind of left. And someone is like, yeah. And so how do we still say God is good when you are walking the deepest, darkest moments and it feels like He's gone, like He isn't present? At a minimum, He's not responding. It's like, why are you not showing up? How do you still trust that a God that can happen sometimes? Like, how did you work through that?
Yes, I think that is the real pain point. So as I mentioned, I have the philosophy that there are certain relationships in my life that I'm going to fight for, that I'm going to fight. We have a saying at the well, we're going to fight for community. And I thought, you know, the God I thought I knew is worth fighting for, and it's worth exploring our relationship. And so I went in with the idea of, I am giving you a lot of trust and credibility based on our past relationship. I'm going to engage this, but if you do not reveal yourself as good, then something is going to change. And so there was a degree of trust. And I mean, I agree with you, Cynthia, that we do not praise people in the doubt, because to continue to keep showing up and engaging the doubt and engaging the fear and engaging the hard questions in many ways is more challenging than just being able to say God is good all the time. And that is true, but the person wrestling is actually deepening their faith. And so very practically for me, that looked like, I want to say it was about 9 months after David passed. I was just in despair. And I was like, I do not know where to turn. You are not answering me. I am reading the Bible and it is dry and dull. What do you want me to do? And I landed on Psalm 27, verses 13 through 14. And in the Amplified Version, it says, I would have despaired had I not believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be still, let your heart take courage, and wait for the Lord. And I thought, great, this is not certainty, this is not confidence, this is I would have despaired. And I'm like, yes, check me, I am despairing. What is the antidote to despair? Well, King David believed he would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. And I was so sick and tired of people telling me, like, David escaped the sufferings of this world, and aren't you glad he is dwelling face to face with Jesus, and all these things. And of course that is true. And yes, I am glad my son is no longer suffering and is with his Lord. But when people say that, it kind of placates you and it minimizes your deep suffering. And so I thought, okay, this is not I will see the goodness of the Lord one day when he returns and makes all things new. It is a promise for now, today. And so I thought, I'm going to take you at your word. If your word is infallible and inerrant, then I can pray this. And if you are the God I hope you to be, then you will answer this prayer. And so my prayer became, show me the goodness, your goodness in the land of the living. And of course, that wasn't a prayer of like, so John Mark Comer defines biblical hope as the expectation of coming good based on the person and promises of God. The expectation of coming good based on the person and promises of God. And so it doesn't mean we can pray like, Lord, I would love to win the lottery, or Lord, I trust that you will give me another child. I hadn't received such promises, but I could pray this promise. And so it became a daily heart cry of just, would you show me your goodness? And that began to shift and change everything for me. And so I'd say for people that feel that they are just in the dark, that there is no light and that there is no hope, we can pray promises of God back to God. We can pray the lament psalms. And I love Doug McKelvey's book, and it is escaping me right now. Every Moment Holy, volume 2. It is on death and grief. And when I had no words, I just prayed those words. And there was something very rooting about the fact that in church history for the past 2,000 years, there have been other people that have walked through this, and that there was light at the end of the tunnel. And so I also invited other people in with me. I was very blessed to have a worship pastor who checked on me, and he said, you know, how are you doing, Tiffany? I said, I'm not doing well. I stand at the back row of the worship service every Sunday, and I'm a pastor, so I have to be here, but I don't really want to be here. I can't sing any of these songs. They don't feel true, and I just weep. And he said, Tiffany, that's what the body of Christ is for. He said, we will sing when you cannot sing. We will pray when you cannot pray. We will worship when you cannot worship. Would you allow us to carry you?
Wow.
And when I look back at that 9 month period of just dark night of the soul, I still cannot see God's evident fingerprints, but I can see how the people of God surrounded and carried me. And that was God's provision. And so I would say, if you feel hopeless, if you just feel discouraged, fight for community, invite others in. If you can, pray God's words back to him. If you cannot even pray those, maybe listen to a song or read a liturgy back. But know that there is nothing wrong with you and that you are faithfully engaging the struggle. And that is admirable.
Mm-hmm. And so when and how did you see the goodness of God in the land of the living?
You know, I kept praying for kind of a Saul on the road to Damascus experience. I just wanted him to like blind me with light or joy, or like, you were grieving and now you are not. I would say it was a very gradual progression, almost like a sunrise where there begins to filter in a little more and a more and more light. And I gradually began to hear from God more clearly. And I would say it was a gradual increasing awareness of his goodness, looking like things I didn't expect. I wanted the pain and the suffering to go away, but it was becoming more aware of how the church body was surrounding me. It was delighting in spring and seeing the buds on the trees. It was praying the promises of God and very gradually beginning to see those fulfilled. And I think sometimes we have this idea that like sorrow is on one side and joy is on the other, and the faithful Christian moves from sorrow into joy. And I was able with my spiritual director and grief counselor to begin to understand that it is both, and you are not more faithful if you are on the joy side than the sorrow side, that much of the Christian life is holding them both in tension. Mm-hmm. And when I realized that I could be have joyful sorrow and sorrowful joy, and that it's never going to be one or the other, but both, and there is a freedom to live in the tension. And I think that was a moment of healing as well.
Yeah, yeah. Hey friends, can I introduce you to our newest podcast sponsor, Time for Learning? And Time for Learning supports a flexible, personalized homeschool experience for your family. What I love is it's an all-in-one curriculum. It's online and everything you need to teach pre-K all the way to 12th grade. And flexibility, I mean, that's the key here. You can travel, you can explore your kids' passions and hobbies without the constraints of traditional school hours. And so you can get started with a monthly plan to see if it's right for your family and multiple students. Yep, you can do that. You can save up to 30% by opting for an annual plan. And they also have stay on track features, which is templates for transcripts, grades, diplomas, just makes it easy to match the homeschool requirements in all 50 states. And get this, they have been in business 20 years and served over 1 million students. What I also love and what I plan on doing in my house, it's a great way if you don't homeschool, just to supplement. Things you can do in the afternoon, you can do it over the summer to bridge gaps. And so I'm excited about doing that with my youngest. So check it out. If you're curious if Time for Learning is right for your family, visit timeforlearning.com. That's time, number four, learning.com to explore their curriculum and find the perfect plan for your student. You can get started with a monthly subscription to see just how much your kids enjoy learning on their own terms. I was curious, when you went through this period where you're disappointed with God, and you talk a lot about this in the book about how to approach this with God, and I think we've all heard before, if you grew up in church especially, that it's okay to bring your trouble and your struggles to the Lord. But I was thinking about this, and I've said this on the podcast before, but with our youngest that we adopted from foster care, there's been some stuff that have been really hard with him in the last couple months. And there's one night when we were in Disney, and he's just having the hardest time. And I laid in bed, and I just, you know, I just had a few words with the Lord. And I was like, listen, if you're my shepherd, I don't feel shepherded. Mm-hmm. And if you're my protector, I don't feel protected. And if you are going to move mighty, mighty mountains for people, and you say care for the orphans, I need you to care for him. I need you to care for us. And like, I had a pretty tough word with the Lord laying in bed in a hotel one night. And it wasn't just he had a bad day at Disney. I mean, it was an accumulation of a lot of things. But I don't feel like I had reconciliation in that moment. Like that it was that the Lord was just like, okay, well, let me explain now. But it did feel good to be able to just say, hey, I'm frustrated and I know these things be true about you and you're not showing them to be true, Lord. And so I'm going to need you to shore some things up for me because this isn't good. And you know what? I was okay with it. And I believe the Lord is okay with it. And he's worked through a lot of things since then. It hasn't fixed them, but he's worked in my heart more than the circumstances. But talk to us a little bit about that. For someone who's like, gosh, I don't know if I feel that comfortable doing that, or that is not how I was raised, that you talk to the Lord that way. Like, is there some good to be had by being just honest to yourself and to the Lord about it?
Yes. Again, if you read the Psalms, like, David is frightfully honest. He's like, slay the wicked, you know, knock out their teeth, you know, let nothing be alive. Like, he is very brutally honest. You know, I think of Elijah, who had just seen the prophets of Baal consumed with fire and seen God's mighty presence fall. And then he's like, I am in the desert and there is nothing good and there is no one faithful. Just kill me now, Lord. Like, people tend to have these high highs and these low lows. And the Lord does not praise them, quote unquote, because they have the right behavior or the right response. They are deemed faithful because they continued walking with the Lord through the ups and the downs. Yeah. And so going back to this kind of spiritual formation vocabulary, it is actually an invitation to deepen your walk with the Lord. Mm. There are many people who do not have crises of faith, and praise God for that. But for those of us that do have crises of faith, it is an invitation to know the Lord and ourselves in a different and a deeper way. I think of Peter, who said, you know, Lord, I would die before I would allow someone, you know, to take you. And yet he, to a servant girl, denied knowing Christ three times. There are so many people in the Bible that profess deep, deep faith in the Lord and then had a crisis moment and hit the bottom, and the Lord did not abandon them. In fact, he drew near to them. He drew near in the suffering. And so I'd say for those of us who aren't comfortable with really deep, honest vocabulary, there's a book I really love. It's called Gentle and Lowly by Dane Ortlund, and probably more than any other book outside the Bible has helped me to come to understand that Jesus, fully God and fully man, is someone who not just draws near to the suffering and the grieving and the mourning, but like his heart is oriented towards that, and that he meets us there. And that like a faithful father or a good friend, he not only can handle, but welcomes all of us. And when you think, I'm thinking about your son, Cynthia, I'm thinking about my 5-year-old daughter, who is a spicy one, who has high highs and low lows. And sometimes we as mothers get the worst of the behavior. And my sister is a child therapist. And I was like, I don't understand. She doesn't do this to anyone else. And she said, you know, Tiffany, you are the person she feels most comfortable with. And so she is safe to let it all out. And there is a love and affection knowing that you can let it all out and that the Lord will not leave you or be shocked or say, that is too much, shame on you. You know, I am leaving. But to be known with your mess and to be able to call it out and say, I am disappointed about this, invites an intimacy and a deepening of the relationship that you would not know otherwise. So I would say it may not be in your personality or your comfortability to be able to lay it all out to the Lord. And maybe it's not verbally. Maybe you write it down. Maybe, you know, you're running or walking at the gym or in your neighborhood and you're just thinking it. But there is no shame in that. And in fact, there is great freedom there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's talk about this wanting to move forward in grief. I mean, is that even a thing? Do you have to want to? I mean, does anybody want to? Do you want to stay in it? Or, I mean, I think you want out of the, if I think to my own scenarios, I want out of the pain side of it, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want out of the memories and the, you know, depending on, it depends on what it was, obviously, but in a death, I'm thinking in a death, like I don't want out, I still want that memories and that relationship intact, but I want the pain gone. I think about maybe if you have gone through a divorce, I would guess maybe that you're like, I want all the memories gone and the pain. And like, do you, what's the factor of the want to start healing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think particularly in, if we're going to talk about grieving the loss of a loved one, and I'll say relatively healthy, because there is complicated grief, and we lose people we love, but we're very difficult. But if you're grieving the loss of a loved one that was relatively a healthy relationship, I love the quote, "What is grief if not love enduring?" And I've taken comfort in that fact that 8 years later, I still weep over my son because I deeply love him. And it is a reminder that relationships were not meant to end. We were meant to have everlasting communion with the Lord and with one another, and that death is an unnatural separation. And so I'm like, it's okay to grieve this. But as far as wanting to grieve, as you mentioned, it is complicated. It depends on your specific loss. If it's an absence, if it's a loss of a dream, if it's the loss of a person. But I'll speak to, I think sometimes, and I learned this in Grief Share, we think if I process through the grief, then the person will feel more distant. In some ways, we can almost hold on to the idea of like that the pain is the person. And that is somewhat true in my story, because all 53 days of his life were wrapped up in pain. But really, when I say like the invitation is to grieve with the Lord and to walk through it with him, what I mean is the pain and the brokenness, and to find some degree of healing. I don't think this side of heaven we will ever fully heal from grief, because there has been a rupture, a broken something, and that is not good. And only the Lord returning can not just make things what they once were, but better than they once were. But as far as getting through the pain, we very rarely see in scripture where God just divinely healed someone from their grief without their participation. Can he do it? Absolutely. But more often he invites our participation. And so I feel like there does have to be some degree of willingness. There doesn't have to be a lot. You know, there's a lot of obstacles to engaging our grief. How many of us know that we would benefit from, you know, doing counseling work or going to addiction or grief therapy or whatnot? And we're like, it's just too much. It requires too much time, too much energy, maybe too much desire. But I think just the tiniest desire to say, like, Lord, where are you in this? Would you show me your goodness? Would you bring me through this process, is an invitation. And the Lord delights when we put even the smallest yes on the table, and he will honor that. And so I think most often we see that, yes, there has to be some degree of willingness to do the hard work of engaging and naming what was lost, of working through what life looks like now, and then what life could be. Because it's that disorientation, you know, life was kind of here, something happened, the bottom fell out, now I'm disoriented. And counselors talk about the reframing to reorientation. And it doesn't mean all is good or as it should be, or that the pain never happened, but there is a new normalcy. And I think that's what we desire, Cynthia. If it was a loved one, we don't desire that all the memories are erased, but we desire not to be in acute pain all the time. And I think my grief therapist described healing best, again, not that we ever reach full and complete total healing, but healing, at least in the psychotherapy world, looks like that there's a space between the stimulus and the response. So someone doesn't say David and I'm immediately on the floor crying. It's like you can say his name, and there is a space before I respond. And I felt like that was a really helpful definition for me of what tangible healing might look like.
That's so helpful. You have, again, the book, everyone, is called Mourning God, Grieving Loss, Wrestling with God, and Finding Your Way Back to Life by Tiffany Stein. And she has in here a list of ways to help someone who's suffering, someone who's in grief. And I thought I'm going to read through some of these, but she kind of spells them out a little further. So you need the book. But she said, be present, just show up. Remember that your physical presence matters. Be slow to speak. Check in after everyone else has moved on. Help meet tangible needs, like mow the lawn, groceries, that kind of thing. Recognize that you may feel uncomfortable in this in-between space. Share a meal together with no expectations. Acknowledge the sorrow still lingers. Acknowledge the joy, even if the arrival of joy in their life seems too early or too much for you. I thought that was really good. contribute beauty to their home with a living plant, colored card, framed art. Make space to delight in the little things with them. Take them something amusing or funny. Share a favorite song. Start a shared gratitude list on a note-taking app. If it's a birthday, anniversary, or other significant date as it's approaching, ask how they'd like to mark the occasion. Practical ways to help. Anything you would add on for those who are listening that maybe are walking through this with someone, not maybe for themselves, but trying to help someone else?
Yes, I would say in general, it is so helpful to be the person that checks in later because, you know, you've had the surgery and people have brought the meals. You had the funeral. Your spouse left you. And the hurting person's life never goes back to normal. You as their friend, you kind of felt like, well, I was present and then life goes back to normal for you, but it never goes back to normal for them. And so I'd say, as it is healthy, as your capacity allows you, be the friend that continues to show up for them. And don't expect their grief or healing journey to look like theirs. Everyone's is unique based on their circumstances, their relationship to what they lost, their relationship to God. Your podcast, Mesmerized, be okay with your uncomfortability and entering into the mess. Mm-hmm. And it is so helpful if you can offer tangible things. Oftentimes the person in the bout of despair doesn't know what they need. And so when you very kindly text, you know, let me know if you need anything. They're like, I don't know what I need. I need to get out of bed. Can you, you know, but I'm not going to ask you to come, you know, put my clothes on for me and haul me out of the bed. I mean, maybe you will for the certain close friends, but if you can offer something very tangible, you know, may I bring you coffee? Would you like a funny video? Would you like to go for a walk? I can offer those three things today. What sounds helpful? Kind of be in the driver's seat. That's helpful. And then please, please, please pray with intentionality before you speak. You know, Job's friends were at their best when they sat with him for a week in silence. It's when they opened their mouths and started saying, here are five ways to honestly confess all of your sins so Jesus will heal you. Here's, you know, a 10-step program to get to your root sin. It's when they started offering those trite and trivial answers that that eventually earned them rebuke and condemnation from the Lord. And so I would say, please be thoughtful and prayerful about what you say. And if they sell it on a pillow at Hobby Lobby, probably please don't say it. It might be true, but it's going to come across as a trite platitude.
Absolutely. Yeah. We can. That's a good word, everyone. If you've seen it cross-stitched, don't say it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And don't buy the cross-stitch and send it either. None of it. Mm-mm. Well, let's wrap up with this. If you could just have a word with everyone that's listening to this, that's brokenhearted for whatever their situation might be, if you could just give them one truth, one string of hope from what you've walked through, what would that be?
It would be that you are not alone and that life won't always be this way. And of course, that's easy for me to say kind of on the other side of the dark night of the soul. But I'd say even if you don't want God to be the one with you, you are not alone in terms of there are people that love you and care for you. And God willing, you have a healthy Christian church community that will walk with you through this. If you do not, I have no doubt that there are some wonderful churches and support groups in your area that would love to walk with you through this. But grief and sorrow are not meant to live. They are not meant to be lived alone. And we are called to rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. And we cannot physically get through the life, especially not the Christian life, alone. And so I would say you are not alone, both that God is with you and he is mysterious and working in unseen ways you may never know or understand. And he is good all the time, even if you cannot see it. But tangibly surround yourself with people who will love you well, because that will end up being, and as you look back in hindsight, that will end up being the tangible love of God expressed to you. So don't do this alone. Be vulnerable, which takes a lot of energy for some of us, but be vulnerable enough to say, hey, I'm not okay, and I need you. Would you show up for me? And you'll be grateful you did.
Yeah. Well, as I already asked you the question, but I'm going to answer it too, where I asked you, where have you seen the goodness of God in the land of the living? I mean, I think this book's a testament to that. Like, that you are able to put into words and walk this with so many people, countless people that you will never meet will have these words. And it's no easy feat getting book deals and all the things. And the fact that the Lord opened the doors for you to make him known through such hardship is just, I think that those little glimpses of the goodness of God and the Amen. Land of the living. So thank you for doing this, for doing the hard work and for writing the book and for coming on the show and talking with us. What's the best way for people to support you? The book is out. Is it out already? Mm-hmm.
Yes. 1 week ago, March 3rd, it was available.
Fantastic. So the book is out. You can get it in all the usual spots where you buy books. If anybody wanted to catch up with you, follow up anything, is there a way to do that?
Yes. So Facebook and Instagram, Tiffany Stein, and then also my website, tiffanystein.com. And I have additional resources on there. I way went over my word count limit. And so my publisher created downloadable resources that have like very tangible spiritual formation exercises, reflection guides, just additional resources that as you engage the book, you can go a little bit deeper. And there's also a spot just to share your story and know that I care deeply and I am praying for you.
Amazing. We will link all of this in podcast notes, and I will also try to link some of the books and resources, hopefully all of them. If I missed one, though, y'all can go back and look at the transcript to the podcast, which is in on Apple, at least. It's at the bottom under podcast notes, but I will try to link all of that. And Tiffany, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Cindy. It's a joy to meet you.
All right, friends. It was so great to have Tiffany here, and just her vulnerability and authenticity of walking through something so hard that is still so hard today, but seeing the Lord's hand in it and also being authentic and vulnerable enough to say there were times when she did not feel the Lord's hand in it. So I hope this encourages you. I would ask you to forward this to people you know that might be walking through hard seasons of grief. If you would just forward in this podcast, I think that would be such a gift to them. And then also, don't forget, if you're interested in book club questions for How'd I Miss That, I would love to get them to you and continue, if you don't mind, reviewing it, sharing it, all the things. And more than anything, thanks for being a part of the Mesmerized family. You guys are the very best.